Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
With the golden voice, Ted Williams, Scott Spears, back with you here. I hope I'm back with you here on this Thursday morning, March the 7th, 2024, 12 minutes past the hour, 41 degrees and mostly cloudy skies here in the Marion area. Don't you love a good technical problem to start the day? Well, we lost an hour to technical difficulties this morning, but we got it back up and running. And I have got to send a huge, huge thank you this morning to Sean Kraft, of course, a big member of the team here at WGH Talk, because we found out about 7:30 this morning that we had lost power overnight and the computers did not come back up in the studio, which is a big problem if you want to get on the air. And I believe still in his pajamas, because time was important to get us back on the air. Still in his pajamas, he jumped out of bed, ran over to the studio, got in there, and got us back on the air this morning. So everybody, wherever you're listening this morning, give a big clap to Sean Kraft for doing that, because if he had not done that, we would not be back on the air right now. So here we are. Huh, thanks, Sean. And, you know, nothing worse than a technical difficulty. When you get up in the morning and you're getting ready to do this show and you notice you're not connected at all, that is a problem. And to be honest with you, this problem was so big with the power going out, which that rarely ever happens. Power goes out in the studio, that there would really be no way to fix it. All right, I think we got a call coming in here. Let's see what we've got going. Go ahead, caller.
Boy, you're going to get penalized for that amount of airtime you've lost to us listeners.
I feel horrible. A whole hour down the tubes this morning.
Hey, Scott, how long was you actually off when you come back on the air? Was after the break? Is this the first time you've been on the air?
It's the first time I've been on. Yeah, we lost power at the studio about 50 minutes before we went on this morning, and just got it back on a few minutes ago.
I was listening to you, and I heard the hiccup on the I think it was Glenn Coble. He was going to have something there, and he was going to just repeat and just like a broken, like a record, how it used to skip, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just left it there because the indication on the tablet said that you're still on the air, but it was just nothing on. And it, look how coincidental it was. There at the break, I thought, looked at this tablet and everything says okay on there. I mean, don't say okay, but nothing's changed since you went off. And so I told Carol, I said, well, they still aren't on. She said, why don't you shut that off and turn it back on and see. I'll tell you, Scott Spears, I shut that off and turned that on, and I was on your break time. Now, isn't that a coincidental? So maybe a lot of people don't even know they have to push a button or do this or do that to get back on the air. I don't know. I sure didn't know, but it works.
Well, I'll tell you something interesting. You find out how many people are listening when something like that happens this morning, because I got messages and phone calls from quite a few people saying, where are you? Where are you? And I appreciate that. And it was just the studio lost power overnight, and when all the computers lose power, it takes a minute to get them back up and running. And Sean went up there, like I say, didn't expect to be doing that this morning. Went up there in his pajamas so we could get this second hour on this morning.
Well, I know you couldn't have too many call in because I called you also and your line was busy. So it must have just been somebody like that with your other devices. You can tell people that, called in and stuff on the other tools you got there to people. I can tell when you're reading a message on there because you start laughing, you know, and then you get back with me or back on the air, you know. And I said, well, he got a message there on the screen. That's what he's laughing about.
Well, I tell you what, I was reading a lot of things off the screen this morning in that first hour. It was glory.
But I tell you, I'm glad we're back up and running.
Yeah, I even called up the old station. I said, well, maybe something was up there. Maybe he was up there for something. Nah, it didn't work there. So I'm glad to hear you back. You never know when you're listening and something like you on a station that could have happened to you, you know. You could have maybe sounded like you had trouble. You could have got shocked or electrocuted, and there you are laying there. But
wouldn't that be a way to go out, though? Right there on the mic. Right there on, shocked by a mic.
I would definitely have to make sure your tombstone had a mic on it.
Yeah, we'd have to put on the tombstone, live by the microphone, die by the microphone.
You got it, kid. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Now, one thing I do have to mention, I've got to give a huge thank you. Now, this is after the day where we talked about the Marion Star going postal. By the way, I don't know if anybody has seen the front page of the Marion Star today, but I have seen the front page, and I've got to take my Cubs cap off to them because the headline in today's Marion Star, Thursday, March the 7th, 2024, cheers of joy greet Marion native former U.S. Treasurer. Withrow recognized on 30th anniversary of swearing into office. Now, you might recognize some of the people on the cover of the Marion Star today. Mary Ellen Withrow is, of course, on the cover of the Marion Star, but so is Carrington Nelson, so is Matt Morgan, so am I, and it's a picture from Pleasant last week when we were at the school, and there's a whole article in here, and they really say a lot of nice things about this radio station. And they give Carrington a quote, and they give Matt a quote, and I'm in there quoted, and they quote Mary Ellen's speech. If you want a paper that has historic value, today's the day. Part of Mary Ellen's speech is printed in this newspaper. And not just because we're on the cover, but it really chronicles what happened last week. So my Cubs cap is off to the Marion Star in a big way. Thank you so much for doing that story. And a color picture, big color picture, right on the front of the Marion Star. Hey, it doesn't get any better than that. But it just goes to show you what I've been saying all week about that event last week. It was an amazing event, and I don't think anybody who was involved with it is going to forget it anytime soon. So, hey, thank you to the Marion Star for doing that. And I guess if you go into any gas station or grocery store or department store today that has a newsstand, you're going to see my mug and Mary Ellen's mug and Matt and Carrington's mug staring right back at you today. So thank you, thank you, thank you to the Marion Star for that. Also, you know, it's the first time Matt and Carrington have ever been involved in anything like that. You know, I don't think they've ever been on the front page of the Marion Star for anything like this. So how great for them. I'm so proud. And again, it just goes to show you, Pastor Craig, Linda, Sean, Adam, Terry, Matt Carrington, the best team in the business, and we're having so much fun around here. Now my voice is going to go, of all things. All right. Phone lines are open here for a few minutes if you want to call in and say something. 740-751-4038. That's 740-751-4038 if there's anything on your mind. You know what? I'll tell you, the Marion Star did this so well. There's even a caption under the picture. Mary Ellen Withrow is on stage at Pleasant High School along with WGH personalities Carrington Nelson, Scott Spears, and Matt Morgan. And by the way, that picture was taken by Sean Kraft, so we don't want to leave the important part of that out. Goodness gracious, the stuff that's going on here this morning. So again, I thank the Marion Star for that. That's very, very, very nice. Okay. What else is there to talk about this morning? Well, we have a big day tomorrow here at the station. Jessica Hauser comes back from Jamaica tomorrow. She'll be with us. Of course, Matt Morgan will be with us here tomorrow. So that will be a lot of fun. And Pastor Craig will be with us tomorrow. And I believe, it's my understanding, there are going to be two people with us at some point tomorrow who you probably have, well, one of these people you probably haven't heard on the radio in a couple years. It's really been that long. I can't believe that. And the other person, maybe 3 or 4 months since they've been in the studio. And before that, it had been a long time since they'd been in the studio. So tomorrow morning's going to be a morning to listen starting at 8:15 because we're going to have a whole array of people in the studio tomorrow. Pastor Craig and Matt and Jessica and, of course, these other two people who, you know, you may be able to guess who they are, but I'll leave it as a little surprise tomorrow morning that they will be with us off and running in the morning. And I'm sure there will be conflict because there's always conflict when these two are around. So there's going to be conflict, I'll tell you that, but it'll be hopefully entertaining conflict. Now, can you, you know, one thing though, I'll tell you, I don't know how much I paid for this newspaper this morning because I ran in really quick to get the newspaper. $1.50 is what the Marion Star goes for now. Well, that's not horrible. Worse things have happened. I can tell you that, let's see, what else can I tell you here this morning? What else is going on? If anybody has anything to say, give me a buzz, 740-751-4038. If you stuck with us this morning through the first hour of technical difficulties, 740-751-4038. You know, I think everybody looks okay in this picture. You know, some people worry about how pictures look. It looks to me like everybody looks okay in this picture. I don't think any problem should come of that that at all. So that's a good thing. Well, does anybody have anything more to say about the eclipse? We've certainly talked a lot about that in the last few days. I don't know if a lot of people will come in or not. I really don't know how that whole thing's going to turn out. It'll be interesting to see how it'll all shake out. I hope for the good. I have noticed, and I also have learned, that a lot of people are putting on some events that particular a weekend. So, you know, maybe there'll be stuff to do that you want to go out and get done, and maybe it's something of great fun that will be of great entertainment to you, I guess, as they say. So, that's as that is right now. What else is new? Well, everything went okay this morning at McDonald's. I can report the McDonald's trip this morning was not bad at all. Oh, last night we got together in the studio with Matt and Carrington, and we taped a couple episodes of The Exchange for YouTube. So those will be up and available probably in the next 24 hours or so. One of the episodes, we recounted everything we did in the last week, from going to the capture or the Turn Up the Heat dinner, the dance thing on Saturday night at the Women's Club. We talked about all the events involving Mary Ellen. We talked about the newspaper articles. We talked about the Associated Press stories. So there was a lot to talk about with Matt and Carrington last night when we were in the studio. And I'll tell you, we took this picture last night, which is kind of an interesting picture to some degree. We all put duct tape over our mouth to indicate that we couldn't be quiet. I guess for a talk show, I guess was the idea behind it. It's interesting to put duct tape over your mouth. You know, I think I kind of felt like what it would feel like if I was a hostage somewhere. So, you know, I guess if I'm ever a hostage, I'll know what that feels like because I've had duct tape over my mouth now as of last night and what was going on at the studio. You know, you get into some strange situations sometimes. What can you do? It's just kind of the way it goes in life at this particular point. Okay. Well, we've talked about that, and we've talked about the newspaper. You know, I don't know if there's a big backlash. I still haven't figured out if the Star is still going to be put on newspaper racks or not. I really have not got a good indication of that. Now, I certainly have got an indication that they are going to be delivering through the mail. That's an indication that I certainly have gotten as time has went on. All right. Okay, I think we have a call coming in here. I think I know what this is. As we continue on this morning with the program, we are so glad with the eclipse, which is going to come right through this area on April the 8th, to have our guest on this morning, because there is a great book out by an author, and I'm just so glad he's here with us this morning with the timing of everything that's going on. The new book, American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. The author is David Barron, and he joins us this morning. David, how you doing?
I'm doing really well, Scott. Nice to talk to you. I hope you appreciate just how lucky you and your listeners are to be in the path of this coming total solar eclipse. The next total solar eclipse that will cross over my house in Boulder, Colorado, won't occur until July 22nd in the year 2772.
Wow.
That's how rare these are. You guys hit the jackpot.
You know, and David, that's one thing I want to talk to you about, because there has been a lot of talk, as you can imagine, in this area, because we are right in the eclipse, the area of totality. And
right.
Kind of explain to the listeners why that is such a big deal and why we can expect a lot of stuff going on here April the 8th.
Yeah. So you probably everyone has seen a solar eclipse, a partial solar eclipse before. There was one, well, there was a total eclipse that crossed part of the United States in August of 2017, but where you were, it was a partial eclipse, and most of the country was partial. And in a partial eclipse, the moon passes in front of the sun and turns the sun into a crescent, because the moon is blocking part of the sun. And it's never safe to look at with the naked eye. You need to get special eclipse glasses, and you all should get them, by the way, in the next few weeks. So a partial eclipse is interesting. But a total eclipse is fundamentally different. So for a total eclipse, the moon passes in front of the sun, creating a partial eclipse, but then where you are, the moon will actually fit right over the sun and completely block the surface of the sun for all of about 3.5 or 4 minutes. And during that time, you get plunged into darkness. It's not as dark as night, but it's like a twilight. And during those 3.5 or 4 minutes, during that time only, it is safe to look at the sun with the naked eye. And you will see a sky that looks like nothing you've ever seen. It's like you've been transported to another planet. You are actually in the daytime, looking toward the center of the solar system, looking at the sun. You'll see planets as well. I can go on and on and will, but it's truly magical. I mean, I'm an eclipse chaser besides an author. I saw my first total eclipse in 1998. I got hooked, and I now travel all over the world to see them. I've seen 8 total solar eclipses on 5 continents because it is such a rare and dazzling experience that many people are like me decide they want to do it again.
So this really, when people say once in a lifetime, it really is that.
Absolutely. For an eclipse to come to you, for most people, you're not going to have it in your lifetime. Any given point on Earth sees a total solar eclipse on average about once every 400 years. So for an eclipse to come to total eclipse to come to you is exceptionally rare. And the last total eclipse that was anywhere in the United States was 2017, which isn't very long ago. That's a pretty short period. But from now until the next one in the lower 48 United States is going to be another 20 years. And that one you'll have to go to Montana for.
Mm. You know what's very interesting, David, is that what we're hearing around here is that the traffic is going to be massive because of eclipse chasers and people who come to see things like this, and from neighboring states and even from people in this state who don't live in the area of totality. Do you foresee something like that happening? I mean, I think what projections we're hearing is that in what normally would take an hour and a half to drive, it's going to take 10 hours to drive.
In some areas, that will happen. So in 2017, the last time a total solar eclipse crossed the country, in that case, what's called the path of totality, so that 100-mile-wide zone where it's a total eclipse, not a partial eclipse, but a total eclipse. In that case, so I live near Denver, Colorado. It went across Wyoming, not very far north of here. So a lot of people from the Denver area went up to Wyoming. And right after the eclipse, what would normally be about a 2-hour drive back to Denver, for some people it took 10 or 12 hours. So it is true. There will be places where there will be absolutely epic traffic. Now, whether your part of Ohio will be that, hard to say, because it tends to be, I mean, where there will be lots of people flocking into the path, probably coming north from Columbus into the path. Whether they'll come your way or go another way is unclear. But I would say definitely do your best to not plan to drive very far on April the 8th.
Well, I know in the area here, the schools are shutting down. I believe city government is shutting down. But I was having a conversation the other day with people who run grocery stores, department stores, restaurants, and things of that nature. And there's this idea that obviously with all these people coming in from out of town, that people are going to want a place to park. And will people be able to get to work that day who do have to go to work?
Yeah, I mean, these are legitimate concerns. You know, I mean, there are places where folks are worried about the ATMs running out of money or the gas stations running out of gas. Again, I think there will be places where that's a concern. But then there are other places where, I don't know your part of Ohio well enough to know where the traffic will be or where the people will go. But it's best to be prepared. I wouldn't, like, panic. But if you can stay near home and just enjoy the eclipse near where you are, that's probably the smartest thing to do because, you know, you're in a very good spot. You will, Marion will see a total eclipse that lasts over 3.5 minutes. That's actually a long time for a total eclipse. Most last under 3 minutes. If you were to go a little ways north, you could conceivably increase that time to a little under 4 minutes. So do you want to be stuck in traffic for a few hours to get maybe another 20 seconds of total eclipse? I think where you are is pretty darn good.
You know, the biggest indication I think that we have at this point is that most of the hotels in this area are sold out and were pretty well sold out a couple months ago.
Right.
So I guess that's the indication. Now, David, for somebody who has seen an eclipse, you being the person who has seen the eclipse, what I hear is when it happens, it is so majestic, it is so rare, it is so mystifying that it's total silence wherever you are. Have you experienced that?
Well, it is mystifying. It is spectacular. When the moment that the total eclipse begins, when it goes from being a partial eclipse, when the sun is getting smaller, 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 and the sky is getting darker, 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 and then all of a sudden it's like you plunge down a well of darkness, people will usually cheer. But then it's very mystical and spiritual, and, I mean, you never know how you're going to react. People cry, they jump up and down, they hug each other, they just gasp at what they're seeing overhead. And I know it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but I really am not. A total solar eclipse is one of the very few things in life that exceeds the hype. You really can't overhype it.
And I think that's one of the interesting things that we're all facing at this point, being in the area of totality of this, is that I think people are saying, well, you know, we've seen things in the sky before, and we've seen partial eclipses and so on and so forth. And I think there is a little bit of downplaying of actually what we will see.
And I totally get it. I mean, you know, in recent years, I think there has been a hype machine going in the press when it comes to certain astronomical phenomena. I mean, every time there's another super moon, you know, where, okay, the full moon is a little larger than it normally is, or there's a prediction of a meteor shower. And I love meteor showers, but it's like, okay, if you get under a dark sky, maybe you'll see a meteor every minute. That's fun. But these things, I think, you know, or there's another comet and you can barely see it, right? I get it. This is not the same thing. This is really, I mean, now the key thing is the skies have to be clear, or at least clear enough that you're going to see what's going on overhead. If it's cloudy, it's not going to be the same experience. But if you guys have clear or mostly clear skies, it really will be like you've suddenly been launched into space. I like to say that a total solar eclipse is the closest thing to space travel that you can experience without leaving the surface of the Earth. And I might explain a little bit more about all this. So, again, for the first hour and a quarter after the partial eclipse begins, you'll be watching through your special eclipse glasses, which you should get now. Some libraries are handing them out. You can buy them at Home Depot often or places like that, or buy them online. But get safe eclipse glasses. They only cost a dollar or two. And with those, you can watch the partial eclipse as the moon turns the sun into a crescent. And then that crescent will shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink. And then when you can't see any more of the sun through those eclipse glasses, and at that point the whole world around you will have gone quite dark, then you take the eclipse glasses off. And what you'll see are a number of things. First of all, the colors of the sky will just be astonishing, because overhead it will look like twilight. It'll be kind of a deep purple gray, not dark as midnight, but it'll be dark like twilight. And you'll see planets and you'll see the brighter stars. But on the horizon all around you, it'll be orange like sunset. So it's sunset 360 degrees around you while it's twilight overhead. And in the sky, the main thing you'll be gasping at is the sun itself. Now, the surface of the sun is blocked by the moon. But around the sun is the sun's outer atmosphere, which is called the solar corona, which means crown in Latin. And it looks like a crown or like a wreath. And it's not just some simple ring, but it's beautifully textured. It's like it's made out of strands of silk. And you're actually seeing the magnetic field lines of the sun. And you may also see these kind of red flames coming off the sun that are called prominences. It's just a dazzling sight. But also, we're really lucky that for this particular total eclipse, there will be five planets potentially visible at the same time: Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. And the planets will all be lined up. You'll be looking along the plane of the solar system, and you'll see the sun and the planets together. It's just completely surreal.
You know, David, you mentioned something there that is a little bit of a fear, and maybe you can explain this in a little bit of greater detail than any of us would be able to do it. I mean, this is the Midwest. It is early April. April showers bring May flowers. Overcast weather in April and rain, and even snow, is not unheard of. If it's an overcast day, how could this impact this?
Yeah, well, it'll be a completely different experience. So if it's completely overcast, the day will go from being gray to being black to being gray again. You will feel the shadow of the moon come over you. It will be weird and eerie, but honestly, you will miss out on the true spectacle. And that's why eclipse chasers like me, you know, and weather is the key consideration. And in deciding where to go, one will often study climate statistics and, you know, where are the odds of clear skies best. And so when, you know, eclipses, about every 18 months, there's a total eclipse visible somewhere on Earth. It's often someplace very hard to get to. So in 2027, a total eclipse will go across North Africa, including, you know, right over the Sahara. Not an easy place to get to, but you can be pretty darn sure the skies are going to be clear. So this one, the odds are not as good as one might hope, but they're not terrible, you know, and you don't, you ideally want a completely clear sky. But I've had experiences where the sky's been mostly cloudy, and I've gotten lucky where a hole has opened up in the clouds, and I was able to see the sun at the time of the total eclipse. So, you know, cross your fingers, pray, do whatever, but let's hope that on April 8th there are clear skies all the way from Texas to Maine, and that's the path that we'll see the total eclipse.
We're chatting this morning, have about 20 more minutes here, with author David Barron. The book is American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. And by the way, this book is the winner of the 2018 AIP Science Communication Award in Science Writing. David, clearly an eclipse chaser, why did you decide to write this book?
So I wrote the book because I saw my first total eclipse in 1998, and I was a science journalist, and I went to see it because I was going to write about it, and I just was so bowled over by the experience that I went into it thinking of it as a science-y kind of thing, and it was just a completely emotional and human thing. It just was a reminder of the magic of being alive on this planet, revolving around this sun in an absolutely incomprehensibly large universe. And I decided I wanted to bring the excitement of the total solar eclipse to the general public, and I wanted to do so to write about it, not in a science way, but in a human way. And so I decided to write a book that really is more of a I think it's just a really darn good tale. It's a historical tale that's very light on the science, although, of course, the science is very much in there. But it's the story of a total solar eclipse that occurred in 1878 and crossed America's Wild West. So back then, astronomers knew how to predict total eclipses. And just as they are telling us now that on April 8th, the path will go from Texas to Maine, in 1878, they computed the path, and they knew that this total eclipse would go from Montana Territory down to Texas, right along the spine of the Rocky Mountains, at a time when, of course, the western frontier was not the safest place to be, and when in the east it was the Gilded Age, America was just over 100 years old, we were starting to become an economic power, but America was not taken very seriously by the Europeans when it came to science or other intellectual pursuits. The Europeans looked down their noses at us. And here was a chance, because total eclipses in the 19th century weren't just these dazzling natural spectacles, but they were really important for science. They were, whenever a total eclipse would occur anywhere on the planet, astronomers would put together these grand expeditions to head out to study the sun for all of those 3 or 4 minutes when the surface of the sun was blocked by the moon, and they could actually just study what's around the sun's atmosphere. So in 1878, dozens of the era's great scientists flocked out to the Wild West for this event that was going to last all of 3 minutes as a chance to prove to the world that America should be taken seriously when it came to science. And they're just wonderful, wonderful characters, these people, real-life people, who went out to the eclipse of 1878. And the one, of course, everyone has heard of is Thomas Edison, who at age 31, as a newly prominent inventor who had just invented the phonograph, he went out to Wyoming to study the eclipsed sun and to show that he wasn't just an inventor but a scientist. And he had these crazy encounters in Wyoming with gunslingers and so forth. And there were other characters, too, I can talk about. But it just was this amazing event that was sort of like the moon landing of 1969. It was this, the eclipse of 1878 was this moment that America paid attention to as this moment of science that we all got behind as an effort to show the world what we could do as a scientific nation.
You know, it's fascinating, David. You mentioned Thomas Edison there, but there are some people who, as you, icons who were a part of this, and talk about some of them and some of these characters, because I think that is a very fascinating part of this book.
So there were, as I said, there were dozens of prominent folks who went to the Wild West for the 1878 eclipse. In the end, in writing my book, I decided to weave the story of three of them. So Thomas Edison, of course, from the start, I knew he was going to be one of my characters. Another was an astronomer from Michigan, James Craig Watson, who was an astronomer at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And he went west in 1878 with a specific goal in mind. And that was, he was determined to discover a new planet. Because back in the 19th century, it was widely believed by astronomers that Mercury was not the closest planet to the sun. I mean, anyone who remembers their planets from elementary school, right? It goes Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, and so on. But the solar system starts with Mercury. But if you look at a solar system chart from the 19th century, you'll find there's actually a planet that was thought to be exist between Mercury and the sun, and that was the planet Vulcan. Now, Vulcan, before it showed up as a fictional planet on Star Trek, was thought to be real, because Mercury's orbit around the sun didn't seem to make sense when it came to Newtonian physics, Isaac Newton's physics, which explained the orbits of the planets around the sun, didn't quite work for Mercury. And the way astronomers fudged the data was they said, well, if there's a planet between Mercury and the sun, that would disturb the gravity of the sun, and it would change the orbit of Mercury. No one had ever seen Vulcan, but that wasn't really a surprise. If you have a planet right next to the sun, it'll set with the sun. It won't be in the sky at night. And you're not going to be able to see it in the daytime because it'll be lost in the sun's glare. But James Craig Watson from the University of Michigan thought, well, during a total eclipse, when the moon completely covers the face of the sun and you can, with your own eyes, look at what's right around the sun, maybe that will be a chance to see the planet Vulcan. And he went west in 1878 determined to find this hypothetical planet. And the crazy thing is, he thought he found it. Now, again, there is no planet Vulcan between Mercury and the sun, but the great headline out of the 1878 eclipse was that James Craig Watson found Vulcan. And for a little while, people believed him, and America was being celebrated for that. And then I'll just briefly say that, I mean, the third main character I focus on, who many of my readers find the most fascinating character, was a woman named Mariah Mitchell. And Mariah Mitchell was by far the best-known female scientist in America in the 19th century. She was teaching astronomy at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York, which at the time was a new all-women's college. And this was a time when higher education for women was still very new and actually was considered by some to be a risky social experiment, because a prominent doctor in the early 1870s wrote a best-selling book that claimed in all seriousness that women's higher education was bad for a woman's health, that if a young, maturing woman used her brain too much, it would sap energy from her reproductive organs and turn her into a sterile, masculine invalid. And so there was this panic about whether women going to college was going to ruin women's health. Well, Mariah Mitchell thought this was ridiculous. She taught astronomy at Vassar. She encouraged these young women to use their brains. But in 1878, she realized she needed to show to the American public that women could be smart and healthy and educated at the same time. And so what she did at this time, when there were all of these male scientists putting together elaborate eclipse expeditions to the Wild West, many of them funded by the federal government, she, on her own, put together her own eclipse expedition to Denver that was made up of all women. And it was just a sensation, as you can imagine, in Denver at the time. The newspaper reporters were all over this, these female astronomers who made their way out here for the eclipse of 1878.
You know, David, one of the things that fascinates me about this book is the research. How long did it take to research all of this, and what methods did you use?
I appreciate your saying that. It was a lot of historical research. I mean, I spent about 5 years doing the research and writing for the book, and I spent a lot of time in dusty archives. I was spent a lot of time at the National Archives in Washington, the Library of Congress, Vassar College, other universities, University of Michigan, that, of course, has James Craig Watson's papers. It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. It's like a treasure hunt. I mean, literally looking through original letters and telegrams and diaries, as well as published newspaper reports, published scientific reports. I had to immerse myself in this whole other era. And it was really interesting to spend so much time back in the 19th century to read newspapers and to get to the point where I actually understood what they were talking about, because when you first read a newspaper article from that long ago, you have no idea what the things they're referring to. They're referring to things in popular culture or what's happening in politics. You really have to immerse yourself for a while before you feel like you could. It's like reading almost another language to read something from so long ago. So it was a lot of work, but I'm not complaining about it. It was tremendous fun.
You know what's interesting, David? July 1878 is when this eclipse happened, the one that's chronicled in your book, and here we are in 2024. And certainly one of the big changes is technology, and particularly with this event, you know, I can imagine on social media, moments after this happens, we will see videos, we will see pictures. Certainly that wasn't going on in July of 1878. How do you think that changes this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, I will say, first of all, despite the differences, there are a lot of similarities, because by 1878, news could travel quite fast by telegraph. And so people in the East that afternoon or the next morning were reading news about what happened in the West, because people were following, particularly Thomas Edison. I mean, he was such a celebrity even at that point. There was a reporter from the New York Herald who was traveling with Edison and sending reports back to New York. So news traveled fast, but obviously there was no social media. What we saw in 2017, the last time a total eclipse crossed the United States, and what we'll see now is, absolutely, people will be posting on Facebook and Twitter or X or other things about what happened. But let me give a bit of advice, which is, in this social media era, there's an instinct to want to document everything and photograph everything and post it online right away. And I would advise, during the 3.5 minutes of the total eclipse, don't take pictures. You will feel like you want to capture it. But first of all, there's no way that your smartphone is going to take a picture of the eclipse that looks anything like what you saw. Secondly, when the total eclipse begins, people react in all sorts of ways. They just lose their mind. You'll drop your phone. You'll get a terrible picture. But in the meantime, you're wasting precious seconds that you want to just experience it. So don't take pictures of it. What I would advise, however, if you want to capture the memory, this is what I've taken to doing at the total eclipses I've gone to recently, is it's not what's happening overhead that you need to capture, because right after the eclipse, there are going to be spectacular photos taken by professional astrophotographers showing what the eclipse itself looked like. They're going to be online and free, so don't take pictures of what's happening overhead. Take pictures of yourself and the people you're with. So what I do is I set up my iPhone on a tripod about 15 minutes before the total eclipse begins. I point it at me and my family or my friends, whoever I'm with, and I turn it on video, and I just let it go. So I capture a video, not of what's happening overhead, but how I and the people I was with, how we responded. And that's the memory you want to capture, because it's both going to feel like forever, because it's like time stops as soon as the total eclipse begins. And then suddenly it's over. And then it's, oh my God, what just happened? To capture how you responded and then the response of the people you were with, that's what you're going to really want to remember.
You know, David, because we are in the area of totality where I sit right now, how can reading your book before April the 8th, however somebody might choose to do that, help make this a more interesting and informative experience that's about to happen to us?
Right. Well, so I wrote the book. You asked me earlier in the interview why I wrote it. I wrote it because I wanted to get people excited about eclipses and to share the true majesty of this event. You know, it's so easy today, particularly for people who don't live in the path. So if someone's on the southeastern side of Columbus, they're outside the path of totality. And they should get inside. For them to miss this experience would be a terrible, terrible tragedy. I mean that seriously. And so in my book, I wanted just to really convey what a total solar eclipse is like, as well as to bring to life the excitement of it. And so, my book, it's a historical tale. It involves scientists, but it's written in the style of a novel. It's a quick read. It was meant to be that, with really good characters. And it'll just bring to life the excitement of an eclipse. And more than that, to show that even 150 years ago almost, it was the same human phenomenon. A total eclipse connects people like few other events that we can experience. It connects people with, you with the people you will be with on that eclipse, on the day of the eclipse, because you'll experience something you're probably never going to experience again. You'll talk about it for the rest of your life. But it connects people through the generations and through history, because if you read about how these folks in 1878 responded to the same event you're going to see on April 8th, you'll feel a connection through the generations. And even think about the people in the future, like whoever is going to be in Boulder, Colorado in the year 2772, when I'm going to be long gone, but whoever's here then is going to see the total eclipse then. And I tell you, for them, it's going to be the same human experience.
What is your favorite part of the book? Well, what is the thing you like the most?
Well, I mean, I love the story of Mariah Mitchell. She was so much ahead of her time, and really an inspiration for women getting into science. I love Thomas Edison. We think of him today as this old man with gray hair who's an icon of history. But in 1878, he was a 31-year-old kid, clean-shaven at a time when all the men had beards around him. He was just a fun character, and you can see why he became so famous, not only because he was brilliant and just tireless, but he was a showman, too. And he, reading these quotations that he gave to the journalists at the time, he spoke in sound bites. He was really folksy. So I enjoyed getting to know him. But also the eclipse itself. I almost feel like I experienced the eclipse of 1878 too, because I've read so many descriptions of what it was like that year.
Mm. Do you want to remind people again, the book is American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. The author is David Barron, and again, the winner of the 2018 AIP Science Communication Award in Science Writing. You can get it on Amazon, Kindle, audiobook, paperback, hardcover. David, with about 60 seconds left here, give people the pitch for why this should not just be another day, April the 8th.
As I said earlier, this is your chance, in essence, to launch yourself into space without getting into a rocket. During those 3.5 minutes, if the skies are clear, you're going to feel like you're on another planet. This is going to be a sky you've never seen. You're going to be able to see the solar system like you never have before. And as soon as it's over, you're going to think, what was that? That was astonishing. So you definitely want to see it. And let me just give out my website, because I actually have information about the eclipse. So it's American-eclipse.com. And I have a page dedicated to the 2024 eclipse with information about how to view it, you know, where you might want to go, where to get eclipse glasses, stuff like that. So I have links to other resources you'll find on my website. Again, it's American-eclipse.com.
Perfect. David, thank you so much for getting up so early on the West Coast to do this interview. The book is great. I loved it. And the information you've given us this morning, I'm more excited about what's going to happen here on April the 8th, and I'm sure the audience is as well. Thank you, David.
Super. My pleasure. Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye. All right. How about that? Hey, Scott Spears headed for the dugout.
You're listening to the Talk